Hello, and welcome to Under the Dome, the News and Observer's podcast about all things North Carolina politics. Today is Monday, October 18th. My name is Will Doran, and I am going to tell you about what you should be expecting in this coming week here in Raleigh as the legislature kind of winds down its session. We'll see, knock on wood, I should say. We still have a state budget out there that is getting towards the finish line, but is definitely not a done deal yet. You've heard Don Vaughn on this podcast a lot talking about the budget, so I will not try to rehash all of that. If you are coming into this new, though, definitely go back, listen to some of our recent podcasts from Dawn about the budget. She is the budget queen. She can tell you everything you need to know about that. Where it stands right now is the legislature is more or less at an agreement. Even though it's controlled by Republicans in both chambers, the House and the Senate did have some disagreements, but they have more or less come together on some of the issues where they had disagreed and are now in negotiations with Democratic Governor Roy Cooper, who obviously has veto power and can hold up a veto as long as he gets Democrats in the legislature to go along with him on that. So they are working with him kind of behind closed doors to see what it's going to take to either one, get Cooper's support, or two, be able to peel off enough Democrats to override any potential veto. So that is still kind of going on behind the scenes. And that's going to continue going on behind the scenes for an undetermined amount of time. The budget year technically started in July. Obviously, here it's mid-October. We still don't have a budget, so there's not obviously any sort of rush on behalf of the power players here in North Carolina to get that budget passed. But hopefully, we will actually have a budget. It's been a few years since we've had one, and I think everyone this year is kind of the opinion that enough is enough. Stop the fighting. Let's actually come to some sort of compromise that can have both sides moderately happy. And it doesn't hurt that we have a large surplus. The economy did not struggle as much as people had feared because of COVID. However, with that all being said, let's talk about what's really going to be happening, at least out in public this week, which is, well, one, the state fair is back. So let's be real. Everyone is going to be at the state fair eating lots of delicious fried food and turkey legs and going on all the rides and going to look at the giant pumpkins and the prize winning livestock and pies and pickled goods. shout out to a friend of the podcast, Rose Hoban from North Carolina Health News, who is a legendary pickler, has brought home many awards from the fair. If I give her a shout out here on the podcast, maybe she will give me one of those jars of pickled goods that she is so famous for if she hears it. And if any of y'all are at the legislature and know Rose, you should see how she does this year. We'll be waiting with bated breath. But yes, the fair is obviously a big thing. A lot of people are going to be enjoying that. We even saw a little bipartisan action when the fair opened up with Cooper meeting with the Republican Agriculture Commissioner, Steve Troxler, to kick things off. So a little bipartisanship there, in addition to the bipartisanship going on with the budget talks. But the big story is going to be redistricting. And y'all have heard me talk about that on the podcast before. We are in the middle of redistricting, potentially for the whole next decade right now. If the maps survive legal challenges, which they haven't been passed yet, but once they do, they'll almost certainly be sued. If they survive those challenges, though, they're what's going to be in place for the next decade. So this is a big deal, and we're watching it. I've been in the room a lot for the past week or so as they've been drawing the maps. I'm going to continue being in there. It looks like the House is probably going to try to wrap up maybe a little bit sooner than the Senate. The Senate's kind of taking their time. But we're probably going to see some action soon. Probably, I would guess, sometime this week, if not maybe very early next week. But lawmakers have said that they want to get everything finished with redistricting by the end of the month, by October. And, you know, it's October 18th here as you're listening to it, or maybe it's the 19th or the 20th as you're listening to this. But you know, the month is quickly getting away from them. And we've seen some draft maps so far, but we haven't really seen a consensus map. Democrats have come in and drawn a couple maps of their own. And obviously, unlike with the budget, the governor cannot veto any maps here, any redistricting plans in North Carolina. So unlike with the budget on redistricting, Democrats really have no leverage. They can ask for some changes. Republicans might grant them those. And in 2019, when I covered it, Democrats had some proposed changes to the maps that Republicans did accept. And a lot of times it was things, you know, like some of the Democrats wanted to kind of change up the lines within Wake County. And Republicans knew that, you know, they weren't going to have much success in Wake County no matter what. So they said, sure, whatever, you know, we'll take your changes. You know, that there's an instance there in which, you know, you do get, you know, Democrats being able to make some changes they want. Obviously not everything, but some things, as long as it doesn't really interfere with, you know, the political goals that Republican lawmakers have in redistricting. And I should note, in redistricting, they are not technically using political data this year. So, you know, they won't be able to drill down to, you know, house by house level, you know, neighborhood level, to see how people are registered to vote, how precincts have voted for different races in the past, to really fine tune the maps like they did during the last decade. But at the same time, I mean, our politicians here in North Carolina are not stupid. And what's more, they're good politicians. They're good enough that they've been elected to office. They know their parts of the state. They know other parts of the state. They know, you know, which areas tend to be more liberal, which areas tend to be more conservative. Everybody does. If you follow politics at all, it's, you know, it's pretty well ingrained here in North Carolina, which are the conservative areas, which are the more liberal areas. So you don't necessarily even need the political data to be able to make those decisions on, okay, where should we draw these lines? So yes, Republicans are in charge of the process. They're going to get to decide how the lines look. They're not going to be using, you know, past election data, but they also kind of know how past elections have gone. So that's going to be something to watch, to see really how the maps break down once they reach a consensus. What we've seen so far is, especially in the Senate, multiple different versions of, for instance, the congressional maps being drawn. We're moving to a 14th seat with Congress now. We have had 13 seats in Congress for the last decade. We're now getting a 14th seat because the state has been growing so fast. All of that growth basically has happened in Raleigh and Charlotte. I'd need to go back and double check the exact numbers, but it's well over half of the new growth in North Carolina, and I believe approaching 70-80% of the new growth in the state over the last decade that led to us getting this new 14th seat was in Raleigh and Charlotte. So a lot of people say, well, Raleigh and Charlotte should get that seat, you know, one of those areas. Obviously, they're not touching each other. You can't make a district that connects both cities. Well, maybe you could. There used to be one connecting Durham and Charlotte, but that was ruled unconstitutional, as people know, that famously snaking district that went all throughout the middle of the state. But are we going to see Republicans give that new seat without an incumbent in it to the liberal areas of Raleigh or Charlotte? That might be a little bit of a stretch to expect to happen. You know, like I said, we've seen multiple drafts so far. Most of them are putting the 14th seat actually typically either in the kind of the middle part of the state, on the outskirts of the Triad, or to the west of Charlotte, kind of between Charlotte and Asheville, which is actually the area where House Speaker Tim Moore lives. He's from Cleveland County, and there have been rumors that he's thinking of a congressional run, although when we talked to him about that recently, he said it's too early to speculate on anything and pointed out that at the moment, he still has an active campaign up for his House seat, indicating that as of right now, he's still planning on seeking re-election to the House and not making the jump to Congress. But as he said, it's too early to speculate. And, you know, that's the same for everybody. It is too early to speculate. The maps don't even exist yet. It's kind of hard to tell, you know, what, if you're interested in running in politics in 2022, what seat you're necessarily even going to live in, what district you're going to be in, whether that's a district with an incumbent, without an incumbent, leaning right, leaning left. So there is, you know, a lot of action that needs to happen for potential politicians to be able to make up their minds. And getting back to the timing issue, that's why Republicans really want to get this done by the end of October. The filing for the 2022 elections happens in December of this year. So candidates need to figure out by early December, really, what seat they're going to be running in. And so the legislature really wants to be done with redistricting by late October, maybe early November at the absolute latest, since an early November deadline would basically mean that candidates would have a month to figure out what seat they want to run for, to, you know, talk to their supporters, talk to their donors, talk to potential other candidates, and figure out who's running for what. And obviously a month is not a super long time, so they are really going to try to rush to get this done. So I think we could probably expect to see some draft maps, you know, this week, maybe early next week, but I wouldn't be shocked if either the House and or the Senate basically put an end to the map drawing this week and said, okay, we've got enough draft maps out there. Now we need to sit down and actually vote on one. Because, as I said, both the House and the Senate are working on this. And probably for the state chambers, you know, the state Senate seats, the House will just let the Senate draw those. And the state House seats, the Senate will just let the House draw those, probably. They're not going to fight each other over those. But with the congressional districts, our 14 U.S. House seats, you know, the two chambers could have a big difference in opinion in how that map should look. So they need to get their own maps passed, you know, through their own chambers so that they can then kind of talk with each other about, like, okay, how are we going to reach a compromise on this and, you know, make a final decision. Really, in a lot of ways, like what we saw with the state budget. You know, the Senate put out a budget, and then it took the House several months to put out their own kind of counter proposal. And then, you know, a month or two later, we see them finally reach a detente on that and come to Cooper with, you know, with their kind of coalition budget agreement with the House and the Senate. Now, redistricting has to move on a much faster timeline, as I just explained, to be able to get done by late October, early November, in time for that December deadline. Of course, there's also, as far as I'm aware, nothing stopping the legislature from delaying the 2022 primaries. The reason that candidate filing is in December is because the primaries are in March. Some Democrats suggested, hey, why don't we push that primary back to like May, which North Carolina used to do, used to have primaries in May. We recently moved it to March. They said, why don't we, you know, it's not a presidential year, it's a midterm year. Why don't we move it back to May, maybe June, give some more time to either draw the maps or keep going and draw the maps quickly, but then have more time to do public hearings, kind of parade the proposed map around the state, let people come and comment on it, you know, have a lot of public hearings like the legislature did. They had over a dozen public hearings leading up to this process before they started drawing the maps to get people's input from all around the state. There doesn't seem to be any sort of appetite from GOP leadership, however, to do similar round of statewide public hearings once the map is out there, once there's a draft to talk about. They probably will have some sort of public hearing in Raleigh. It'll probably be just one instead of, you know, 12 or 13 or 14 like they did pre-drawing the maps. And obviously it'll be in Raleigh. So, you know, people who live far west, far east might have a little trouble getting to Raleigh to express their opinion on it. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. There are really no details on that yet. It's just, you know, something that we expect and that leaders have said that, yes, they do probably plan to do. So that is, you know, something we'll be keeping our eye on and, you know, keep checking back to that NO website. If there is something announced about public hearings or votes on the maps or, you know, maps being finalized we'll be writing about that. So stay tuned. Have fun at the fair. Keep an eye out for the state budget. And then also, I need to note, too, speaking of the budget, today, there's going to be a hearing in court on a case called Leandro. And anyone who has been following education policy in North Carolina, really at all in the last 2 to 3 decades, knows about the Leandro court case. It's been going on for 25, 30 years now, a very long time. And basically the premise is that the legislature is failing in its constitutional duty to provide for a good public education. Essentially, they need to be spending more money on schools. And Democrats are very much in favor of this. There was a ruling recently that said that agreed and said, yeah, the legislature needs to spend several billion dollars extra on education over the next 8 years. And the judges proposed spending around just under $500 million in this current budget, adding on top of what they had been proposing. And Democrats are all in favor of that because that's what they've been arguing for a long time, that we need to spend more money on schools. Republicans have upped spending on schools, especially from where we were coming out of the recession, which, you know, obviously was a huge financial crunch for the state, had some budget cuts instituted by the Democrat-led legislature back then, signed by Democratic Governor, you know, Bev Perdue. And so GOP lawmakers said, you know, look, we have been giving teachers raises. We have been, you know, raising education spending some. Now, obviously, it is not as much as Democrats want or as much as, you know, the judge in this Leandro court case believes needs to happen. But it kind of gets to a big philosophical question, which is, you know, who's in charge of spending in North Carolina? Traditionally, it's always been the legislature has been in charge of the purse and in charge of making decisions about money. So can the courts system, a separate branch of government, step in and dictate to the legislature, hey, you need to spend more money on this, you know, specific piece of the state budget. And actually, we're not just going to tell you you have to spend more. We're going to give you exact dollar amounts that you have to spend. That's kind of a big philosophical question that this case is going to dive into, has been diving into. And it's going to be really interesting to watch how that plays out here, especially as, you know, this is kind of happening in the middle of budget negotiations. So could be some good fireworks there early this week in the Leandro case, some interesting stuff on redistricting. And I think that's probably more than enough to keep everybody busy. So have a good week. And thanks, as always, for listening. This has been Will Doran for the News and Observer. I will catch y'all next time.
For more from our politics team, subscribe to the News and Observer at newsobserver.com/subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Under the Dome and NC Insider, and sign up for our weekly political newsletter at newsobserver.com/newsletters. Thanks for listening.